somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 worth of stereo equipment for $150 at an estate auction.
We go to auctions all the time.
I've gone to furniture places like, you know, Kenny's and Sears. I've even gone in and negotiated prices with those folks, like for washers and dryers and tools.
I definitely would look through the Sunday papers, and only if it was something that I felt like we were going to be using did I cut. And I used them, sure.
Every year we take it to the consignment shop, and we buy as much as we sell, but but it's, you know, it's 10% of regular store prices. Yeah. So
back in May we got a motel. I stopped and said, you know, what's your rate? I said, you ain't got a better rate? I need a better rate. I can get a better deal down the road. He come down to my price. So it works.
Got a washing machine and a dryer for $400. So he helped me a whole lot.
When you show that cash, it's amazing what you can do with it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Going to be one of the most fun and one of the most important lessons we teach. I am excited to get to talk to you about this tonight because this is personally one of my favorite things to do. Buying big, big bargains. You'll want to open to your lesson there in your Financial Peace University notebook. Get ready because we're going to fill in the blanks and we're going to go. You know, one of the things I run into when I get ready to talk to people about buying bargains, and I tell them stories about how I've gotten great buys on things, and sometimes in class we'll be sitting around in the circle and discussing this in Financial Peace University, and sometimes folks are a little bit offended. You know, you're not, you know, if you got a bargain, if you got a good buy, by the very definition of that, some folks think that automatically means that someone else was harmed. And it doesn't have to be that way. I want to walk you through how to buy bargains in such a way that you can be glad you're a human. You can be glad you're part of this thing called the human race. See, there are some guidelines if you're going to buy bargains or if you're going to sell something and sell it well and enjoy it that you need to go along with and you need to understand. The first thing is you need to understand that you can in no way have misrepresented the truth. You cannot have misrepresented the truth. Obviously, if you're lying in order to get a great buy, you know, my child is dying, and you get the sympathy thing going, I mean, that's a lie, unless that's the truth, but I mean, you can't do that stuff. You've got to be telling the truth all the way through the thing. And if you're doing that, then, well, you're okay. And of course, your intent, the intent of your heart has to be right. You can't have set out to harm someone in the process of getting your bargain. Your idea isn't that you're there to fillet someone. You're there to hurt someone or harm them or literally put them out of business by the process that you're in. Now, some of them will wail and cry and moan as if you have, but your intent can't be that. You can't come upon that situation that way. And the last thing is you need to have created the win-win type of a deal. We're going to talk about that a lot for the next few minutes because that's something I think that as Americans that we mess up. See, as I travel around the world, and many of you have, you know what I'm talking about. Bargaining, negotiating is a way of life everywhere but in America. In America, we get in our fleece car, put credit card gas in it, drive it to the mall on a bond-financed highway, go into the shopping mall, walk in, buy something on an 18% credit card, and think we got a bargain because it said sale over it. Everywhere else in the world, you have to go through this process to buy stuff. How many of you have visited other nations, other cultures, where negotiating, it's a way of life? We had these friends that were missionaries, and I think they spent just a little bit too long on the mission field. because she was in one of the shopping malls here locally yelling at one of the clerks, "Not good enough! Better price! Better price!" But see, that's the way it is everywhere else, isn't it? Of course, they're calling security at the mall, right? I mean, they look at you like you've lost your mind if you just suggest that maybe they want to come down on their price. I mean, it's got a scratch on it. Come on. Well, you know, I'm not authorized. Well, who is? Get me the manager. I want a bargain. You see, I'm sick and tired of all of my money going to these companies because it has become a cultural thing to just pay what the sticker says. Well, you know, I'd be embarrassed. I know, but embarrassed, I'd rather be embarrassed than broke. I mean, it's time to start thinking different about this money thing. Every other culture in the world, you go into the marketplace, the bazaar, what we would call the flea market. Now, some of you people who will walk in to a retail store and write a check, pull out the cash, pull out the credit card, and just pay for something, you'll hurt somebody at the flea market or garage sale. I mean, you're vicious. You know, you get ready, get in attack mode, right? So you ought to try this stuff everywhere. We're going to learn a few things tonight about buying bargains. Many of you are already doing some of these things. My challenge at the beginning of this session, and again at the end of this session, will be to remind you that this has to become a way of life if you want financial peace. Let me tell you, one thing that wealthy people do religiously is they ask for a deal. And most of the time, they get it or they leave with their money. And we're going to talk about that. That's how they became wealthy. They quit playing everyone else's games. They quit playing all these marketing games and falling for them. There are several keys that help you open the door to huge bargains. And if you want to open that door, the first one you have to understand is what we're talking about here. You need to learn to negotiate everything. Just start with the assumption that you can buy that thing in a bargain. I'm amazed at when I just ask, when I just open my mouth and ask. You know, how many of you ladies have said at the department store, you ladies are better at this than men usually, is that going on sale next week? You know what I'm talking about? Just ask. But do you ask every time or do you ask, you think about it, oh, should have done, go back to the register, you know, I forgot to ask. You wouldn't want me bringing this and doing all that exchange stuff next week. Let's go ahead, I'll have to get the code. So get the code. You know, ask everything at some point in some place in some quantity with some delivery date is negotiable. You should ask. You should just make it a way of life to ask. But I'll tell you, some of you have this guilt trip thing going still, and it's like you're afraid you're going to hurt someone because you honestly have been taught by someone or by this culture that automatically, if you get something good, that means by default someone else gets something bad. That you can't do a win-win deal. Win-win deals really do work. So don't be afraid to ask for the deal. It absolutely works, and it works every single time. Roger Fisher and William Urey, who are with the Harvard Negotiating Project, have a series of tapes and a book out called Getting to Yes, where they talk about negotiating and negotiating techniques. These guys are world-class negotiators, and they tell the story of the orange. Two elderly ladies living in a home have one orange in the house, and they both want the orange, and so they negotiate back and forth. They talk about it. They bicker. They fight. You know, the thing, we always see negotiation as a fight. Let me give you an interesting thing about negotiating when you're doing it on a detente level or when you're doing it on a high-level business negotiation. It works the same way when you're buying something at a garage sale. 90% of winning a negotiation is gathering information about what the other party's needs, wants, fears, passions are. When you understand that, then you can figure out how you can get what you want and they can get what they want. If you don't gather information in the process, if you simply automatically assume price is the only negotiating point, both of you double up your fist and you begin to fight. And then it's just whoever dukes it out, whoever flinches first, who's got the best poker face as to who wins. That's 4-year-old negotiating level. These two ladies did that over the orange. Finally, after debating rather than negotiating, they gave up and they cut the orange in half. Lady number one took her half up to the kitchen, peeled the peel off, used the orange peel to bake a cake. Have any of you ever done that or heard of that? You know what I'm talking about? Lady number two sat down there in the living room, spread out a towel on the coffee table, peeled the peel off, and ate the fruit in her half. What if they had talked? What if they had understood what the other one wanted? See, the lady in the kitchen could have had 100% of the orange, couldn't she? Because the lady for the peel, the lady in the living room didn't need the peel, did she? The lady in the living room merely wanted to eat the fruit. If they had talked and had understood that, then absolutely they both could have had the whole thing. See how win-win works? It's about caring about the other person, not setting out to harm them, not misrepresenting the truth, in no way messing up people, but just gathering information. How can I help you? Let me give you an idea. I'd like to sell this orange right here for $20. Any takers? No, wait a minute. You did that. You know, this is 20. You're like, you're trusting me here. This is pretty scary. Or you're not right. One, we're not sure. Okay. But, well, I tell you what. You want to shake on it?
Sure.
All right. $20. You got your $20? All right. Let me see it. Because this is a serious transaction. I'm not kidding with you. All right. Good. Come on. Come up here, Matt. What's your name, sir?
Errol.
Okay, Errol. I want to tell you, man, that your trust in me is about to be vindicated. You made a really good purchase. See, this looks like your pretty typical orange, but actually, if we were to do something like cut it in half, about to mess something up here. Oh, my goodness. Look what's in there, Errol. Get that out and roll that out. That could be like a $100 bill. Was that a good buy? It was a good buy. Congratulations. See, you never know what something holds inside of it. Where the treasure is, if you gather information, then you can win. One of the other things I have learned is as you're negotiating everything, there are a few negotiating techniques. These are some basic techniques. I want to teach you these techniques for two reasons. One is I want you to use some of them, and I want you to use them with a good spirit, okay? By that I mean I don't want you to use them in some manipulative or jerk-oriented way, okay? The second thing I want you to know, reason I want you to know these negotiating techniques is they are being used on you every day. And I promise you that the spirit in which they're being used is not always proper, is it? You know what I'm talking about. Now, the first negotiating technique that you have to understand, and I don't know why I have to cover this, but I want to remind everyone that you have to tell the truth. You have to tell the truth. Now, why do I have to remind people that? I don't know, because maybe people don't always tell the truth. If you're selling a car and the transmission is slipping, maybe you ought to say so. Not hold your breath and pray it doesn't slip when they do the test drive. That's lying by default. Okay, that's a lack of integrity. And let me give you an interesting statistic. Tom Stanley, who wrote the book, The Millionaire Next Door. How many of you have read that? Good, a few of you. The rest of you need to read it immediately. It's a phenomenal work. It's now in paperback. And it absolutely will give you all of the lineup of what a millionaire looks like. He did a consummate study of millionaires in North America and how they act and what they do. Read The Millionaire Next Door. His second book that came out was called The Millionaire Mind. Now, what Tom Stanley did with that book was he studied the top 0.25% of people in North America income-wise. Now, let me tell you who that is. These are people with a $10 million or greater net worth. They're a decamillionaire. A $10 million or greater net worth. These are people who year in and year out have averaged $750,000 a year income or greater every year. Would you agree with me that these are some rich folk? Interesting statistic, as he studied that, he found that 87% of them, almost 9 out of 10 of them, were first generation rich. Meaning they started, like you and I, with nothing. In this land of opportunity, only they did better than most of you and I with that. And they won. They went out, they left the cave, killed something, and drug it home, right? I mean, they really are doing this thing. And $750,000 a year income every year, that's pretty strong. A $10 million net worth, that's pretty strong. And what he studied was the variables in these people's lives. He came up with 38 different areas that he measured. Real good news. Grades was way down in the 30s. Most of these characters had a B- average in school. There's hope, right? So grades wasn't the thing that caused it. As they went up the ladder, I was really interested to find that as he interviewed these men and women, and he interviewed their vendors, and he interviewed their employees, and their children, and their spouses, and people all in their lives, the number one characteristic, the characteristic he says he found, the only characteristic he found common in every single one of these people he studied, everyone without exception, it was the highest statistical correlation with extreme wealth. The number one variable that all of these people shared was integrity. Extreme high levels of integrity. Now, television hasn't told you that. Television told you J.R. Ewing is the way business is done, right? And we have believed that. That if you cut a corner, you shave an edge, that that's how you win. These people had extreme levels of integrity. If you want to win, if you want to win, and you want to do a win-win or a triple win in a negotiation, you have to have extreme levels of integrity. You always have to tell the truth. Now, that doesn't sound like much of a negotiating technique, but I'll tell you what, you've got to be really careful when you're dealing with people who don't tell the truth. We have a saying around our business, life's too short. I don't do business with people who lie to us. You can't keep up with them. You can't figure out where they're going next. I can't trust the intent and the direction of where they're going. I don't care how good the deal is. Everything's a lie. You know, because once the trust is broken, it's like Humpty Dumpty. You can't put it back together again. It's tough. So we just don't do business with people who don't have integrity. It's tough. And we're maniacs about it around our place. Always tell the truth. The second negotiating technique, if you want to win, is you need to learn the power of cash. The power of cash. And cash is powerful. It's amazing. When you get $100 bills out and you start counting them out, what that does, everyone's attention right now. It's amazing. Look, honey, he's going to give out samples, you know? I mean, it's... Whoa, right? See, cash is emotional, isn't it? Cash is emotional. It grabs your attention. You remember things that have cash around them. This is my most expensive visual aid, but it's also my most effective, isn't it? Cash is visual. So when you lay $100 bills, don't just say, I'm going to pay you cash. Walk up to the counter and start counting them with a little bit of drama. Okay? The emotion, and then it's visual, and it's like, whoa, dude, get the manager, you know? It's like, you know, this one, I don't know how to ring it up, man, if it's not on a card, you know? And it just messes with people. You know, the other thing, when you're standing at a garage sale, or you're looking at a camper in someone's backyard, or you're buying a car and you start doing this, you know what else cash has? It says the deal is closed. It has immediacy. It's not, I have to check with my banker Monday to see, I'll take your car if my banker will let me. It's, honey, we have a deal if you do the deal. Boom. It's a lock. It's a hand. We know. You know what I mean? It says that there's a closed transaction if I take your bargain. So if I start offering you money for a computer at your garage sale and you're going, because you know, once you nod, that's a lock. Because it's not if the check clears. It's not if the loan is approved. It's not if I come back Monday. It's immediate. It's a lock. It's a powerful negotiating tool. Try cash. Now, some of you are a little more easygoing. You're a little more like my wife. You're not as flamboyant. And that scares you a little bit. I don't know, walking around with cash, I might get mugged. Honey, you've been getting mugged in the mall for years. Maybe you need to try something different. I mean, just try it. Go in there and mess with them. And always use if you're buying a $100 item, don't take one $100 bill. Take five 20s. I mean, have a little flair with it, right? You know, mess with it. If it's, you know, big old roll of ones, just mess whatever it takes, you know. So I got some money here, you know. That's what, because nobody walks around with cash in our culture anymore. It freaks people out. They always think first you're a drug dealer, you know. My wife, Sharon, bless her heart, we got a used washer and dryer when we got married. Now, we have been married 19 years. Now, that washer and dryer was used when we got it. Okay. A couple of Mother's Days ago, I know y'all can't believe this, but I forgot Mother's Day. Oh, that's bad. I mean, it's bad. I mean, we get the kids ready, right? We go to church. It's Sunday, and they're giving out little roses at church. And I'm going, what are the roses for? Oh, no. I am dead meat. So we're walking to the car, and I'm trying to play this off, right? I'm doing my best Elvis. I'm going like, baby, now, you know, we got financial peace. And so if there's anything, me and the kids have been talking about, what we're going to get you for Mother's Day is just whatever you want. We're just going to go get it right now. And she goes, you forgot, didn't you? And I said, yep. So what? We got in the car, and true story, you're pretty safe with Sharon when you say whatever you want, because I've got a good lady. I'm lucky. Some of them would take you to the cleaners on that routine. She said, you know, I want a brand new, I've got that old washer and dryer, and I want a brand new washer and dryer. I'm tired of kicking that thing to get it to work, you know? And so I said, well, all right. I'm thinking washer and dryer brand new. That's what, $500-$600. This is no problem. No big deal. So we jump in the car. I said, okay, baby, we're going to head over here to the scratch and dent store. She said, you didn't hear me. I said, brand new. I said, okay, so where are we going? How about the electronics store that's near the scratch and dent store over there on the same street, just in case you want to look at both? Well, I don't, but we'll go there. So we went over to the electronics store. You know, they got them lined up in there like a car lot, don't they? I want you to know, that woman walked into that electronics store, walked way down through there, and said, I want that one. She had been there before. You know what I mean, right? And I'm thinking, how bad can this be? So I wander down behind her. I didn't know that they had these things, that you needed Windows 98 to operate them, you know? This sucker makes sandwiches at halftime. I mean, it's unbelievable. We totaled it up. It's Sunday afternoon. You know, we got our little church clothes on. We're bringing Mom out so the little salesman, he can just see this deal, you know. He sees that hook hanging out of my mouth. He knows, and he's going, got me a good one. So we sit down at, you know, the little table they have. You know, they get those little closing tables. They're always too small to close the sale. And he's writing it up as fast as he can because he knows he's got one. He writes it up. It's $1,298, taxes, title, and delivery. I mean, it's, I'm just like, But then I grinned and I kicked back and I reached in my pocket and I said, well, we can't do that. And I counted out 9 of these. And I laid them on the table and he looked at me with this look in his face. And she kicked me under the table. And I said, 9 of those is all we can do. He thinks I'm growling at him or something. He goes, I can't do that. And then I said the words that every electronic salesman hates to hear. I bet they can at your competitors, right? And she kicked me again. And he said, well, I'll go talk to the manager. I said, okay, that'll be good. He went away and she said, you don't need another seminar story. Buy the washer and dryer. He came back in a minute and he goes, I can't do it. All I can do is 9:35. Well, I'm having fun now, right? This is now it's about the battle. It has nothing to do with the money. I'm like, you're kidding me. You people advertise $20,000 in the cotton-picking Sunday paper you spend, and you're going to let me walk away for $35. She kicked me again. I said, well, take it. True story. At a retail electronics store, brand new, delivered, we bought $12.98 for $9.35 because of the power of cash. You can't do that every time. You can't do it every time. That's why you leave and you go to their competitor. And you say, I'll bet they have a best, you know, right? You know, you finish the sentence, you know? You could get there, couldn't you, right? And you just have a little fun with this stuff. That way you don't end up B-R-O-K-E, broke. Understand and use walk-away power. You know what happens is you get the fever. I do that. I get where I need something. I'm on a quest, you know. I am out to get the item and bring it home, you know. We'll be back, honey. We're going on a crusade. It's a quest. We're going to kill it and bring it home, you know. And you do. You get that kind of, and you get into where you just won't be defeated. You're going to own that thing, and you're after it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just need to go take a cold shower because when you don't have walk-away power, you smell like salesman bait. You know what I mean? Your voice pitch changes, your body language, your facial expression, the way you stand and tilt yourself near that item changes. There's all these subconscious cues you're given that says, I have bought. And when you give those cues, you've bought. And you're not going to get a deal. If you maintain an emotional distance, a walk-away power, you can then do it. But when you get married to a purchase, you are a baked turkey. It's over. They know that too. They can smell it. You've seen people at your garage sale when they're trying to act cool and act like they're negotiating, and you know they've bought it, don't you? You know what I'm talking about? And we're not even trained in that stuff. But once you've sold for a while, you can see when someone's bought. You can just begin to almost develop a body language and a voice tone instinct. You'll feel the deal coming together. It's, oh yeah, it's locked. And they act like it's not locked, but you know it's locked. You can feel it. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? You have to maintain that distance, that emotional distance, or you will lose. Let me tell you, we do this with Pizza Hut and Papa John's and Domino's. I've threatened to put them all three on a conference call. Just see who will give me a deal. You know, get the managers and let's just see. We're going to order 10 pizzas for the birthday thing here. Let's just see who, let's let the bidding begin. And this is a reverse auction, right? You know, and if nothing else, at least get the manager on the phone and say, honey, will you honor the other one's coupons? Because you know they will. You know they're at war with each other. They want that market share. They want that consumer thing. They want your name and your phone number in the database. So when you dial up and the caller ID kicks in, they can say, hello, Mr. Ramsey. You know what they're doing? I mean, this is not a game, is it? That has value to them. You have value to them. Act like it. Get something back if you're going to give out your information. Because you are when you dial the phone these days. That's how that works. But boy, when you don't have walkaway power. See, my wife Sharon now, I've told you, she's the sweetest thing on the earth, but she does not like to do this confrontation thing. She just can't. So we've been kind of working on this stuff, and we were practicing, and we went down to the flea market, and she saw this antique iron bed thing, you know, that she wanted. And I could just see it. I mean, I said, well, let's practice this. Come here, let's go around the corner. Take a breath, breathe, you know, right? Now walk back around like you really don't want it, okay? Try walking a little different, okay? She messed with this guy. He wouldn't take the price. By the time we finished with him, bless his heart, she got into it. I thought he was going to pay her to take it, you know? It was unbelievable. And I think she bought the thing for like $10 by the time we were through. She just wore the poor guy out. She got all enthused. And then she was doing real good and feeling kind of confident about it. And we were walking along. And then down in the distance down there, she saw the wicker furniture that we needed for the patio. And you could just see, it was like someone running through a wheat field in love. She bought that furniture for 45 feet. Every step she took. And she walked up and said, oh, and then she caught herself and said, well, now I need a bargain. And by then, this guy's laughing, you know? She hadn't said a word, but I mean, she bought it. You know what I'm talking about? Body language. She was married. We paid full price for the wicker furniture. I mean, there wasn't any negotiating with that guy. It was over because she was married and he knew it. And we're talking about married to the purchase. The fourth thing you need to understand if you want to get good bargains is you need to learn to shut up. You talk too much. Silence is one of the most powerful, pressure-oriented things in a negotiation, in a sale, in a conversation. Silence, when you're learning drama, gives huge levels of drama. When you're doing things on stage and so forth, you need to keep that in mind. You know, just be quiet. Walk up and ask a question and then just shut up. It's tough, isn't it? It's hard to just sit here and be quiet. Especially in our go-go culture. Somebody wants to jump in. Someone wants to get involved, right? Someone wants to get out there and you want to add a little bit. And if you visualize yourself as being in a negotiation, then you get a little nervous and you want to add and you jibber-jabber the price. I'm amazed at if I'm just quiet how much people will come down before I ever start negotiating price. I just smile and look at them. Don't even say a word. I haven't even entered into the discussion yet. Just smile. All right, I'll take 100. 50, okay. I've done this a couple times. The funniest one ever happened to me was I was goofing off. I wasn't even looking for a car, and I dropped onto this used car lot, and I thought, I'm going to just do this just to mess with it, just to see what happens, because used car salesmen, some of them are the worst, aren't they? And I walked up to the edge of this nice little car, mid-sized car, I won't say the brand name, and I'm just standing there. It looked like a pretty nice car. I'm just standing there looking at it. He came up and introduced himself, and I said hi. I didn't give him a name or anything, and I'm just standing there. And he's yip, 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 like a broken chihuahua running around this car, right? Yip, 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 yip. Finally, he says, you know I can get you a better deal. And I'm just looking. It was really hard to not at least be courteous and do something other than grunt. You know, I'm just, I guess he thought I was mute. And he's coming down on the price, and he's coming down. And finally, he says, and I'm just standing there by the front fender. Finally, he says, now I know a man of your obvious intelligence can tell this car has been hit. I had no clue. This guy would talk himself into a hole from now on. I mean, you people in sales, you know what I'm talking about. Shut up. Negotiating, you have to learn to be quiet. You'll be amazed. And if you'll combine shutting up with a couple of these other things we're going to talk about, stand there with cash and be quiet. See what I mean? It's amazing what will happen in your life when you do that. All right. And then the next one is, that's not good enough. See, we want to jump in. If someone has they're offering the car for sale for $8,000, and they say, well, what would you give? We want to jump in and we'll say $6,000, hoping we'll meet somewhere in the middle, and we go back and forth, closer, and then I'll split the difference and meet you in the middle. You know that routine, right? That's how we all tend to play this thing. Quit playing price. Just look at them, and they say, you know, $8,000, that's not good enough. And shut up. Can you imagine the power of the pressure that builds in that situation? Because what's going through their mind is what is. And they'll say something like what is, and you just say, well, I don't know, I just know that's not good enough. What do you think? And throw it back on them. Let them come down until they get so frustrated they quit coming down. They may come down, their first drop may be further than you were going to start. You know, I've done that many times buying even big ticket items. Just say, that's not good enough, and shut up. I'll tell you, those of you that are struggling and you're facing collectors and they're barking at you and barking at your heels, you'll hear that line a lot. That's used in collections training a lot. If you say, well, I can get you a check by Monday. I can get you half Monday and I'll get you half in 2 weeks. Their immediate response, even if that was more than they would take, is just to see what you'll do, see how much more they can dig out of you. They will say, that's not good enough. They'll mess with you. I'll never forget when I was going down losing everything I owned. I had this woman call me from a bank and they had a loan on our car and on our boat. And I said, you know, I've got a real estate closing next Wednesday. This is Friday night. And she's like, wah, 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 wah. And I said, look, I can have it to you Wednesday. I don't have it before then. She said, that's not good enough. And I finally, it started hitting me. I've been selling most of my life that this was a verbal technique that she was using on me. And I caught on. I thought, you know, this is a game and I'm not playing. I need to get back in the game side of this. And so I said, okay, this is like a sales close. I got to counteract this thing a little bit. She says, that's not good enough. And I said, so? Well, we're going to do all these mean and nasty things and we're going to call your mother's names. And I said, well, just, you know, do it. Wednesday, I've got the money. I'll bring you the keys Monday, but I owe $22,000 on it. The whole package is worth about $12,000. If you want it Monday rather than Wednesday, take the money. It'll be okay with me. So? Well, that wasn't in her training. It messed up her whole script, you know? You know what I mean? So you know, you got to understand, sometimes this is being used on you. Listen for that verbiage. It's pretty common verbiage in sales and marketing and negotiating circles and things like collectors. That's not good enough. But it's okay. I use it sometimes with my kids. They come in and they got this thing, and I look at it and say, you know, that's really good, but that's not good enough. Go do a better one. And they'll come back a few minutes later. Well, yeah. Well, that's not good enough. Well, what else you want me to do? I don't know. It's just not good enough. Clean a room again. They keep finding dirt. I keep sending them back. They find more dirt. You know what I mean? Sometimes I send a vendor back 3 or 4 times until they begin to catch on that I'm not paying full price anymore. And I've trained my whole team like this. It's awful. It's awful. That's not good enough. But they don't have to do business with us. It's okay. If it's not good enough with them, then that's all right. We'll get someone else to do the printing. Someone else to reprint the videos or reprint the audios or whatever else we're doing. It's okay. I mean, everybody's not meant to do business with me. It's all right. But that's not good enough. Now watch for this one. I don't like using this one, but it happens a lot, especially on car sales. The good guy, bad guy technique. Good cop, bad cop. You've seen that on the Miami Vice reruns or on NYPD, right? They use the good cop who's going to take up for the criminal and the bad cop who's threatened to wail on him, right? Now, sometimes a salesperson or a collector will use that. They'll talk about their mean old manager who's in the next room, has one eye in the center of his head, teeth coming out. He's foaming at the mouth. Don't send me back in there. Please don't send me back in there to ask for another price. The manager is not even there. They just go in the other room, lean back, have a cup of coffee, come back out in a minute. They'll go, okay, now, he said, you know, they mess with you. That's called position selling on the car lot. It was taught for years by the major auto manufacturers. They don't do it as much anymore, but it's so ingrained in some of those sales trainers that it still goes on every day. The finance manager, that's one you'll hear a lot, can't get the loan approved at that. Oh, they can get the loan approved, honey. They just wanted more of your money. That's the deal. Okay, it's a good cop, bad cop. And let me tell you how to break it down, to diffuse it. Anytime they say, they go to the back and they check with the manager, like with the washer and dryer thing, he came back, he said 9:35. That's what the manager said I could do. If he absolutely can't get the manager to go along with that and he keeps positioning me with that, good cop, bad cop, just diffuse it by breaking down the leg, break the leg out of the good guy and go straight to the bad guy. Say, well, what I need to do is talk to the guy who's making the decision. Because when you get face to face with that individual, if they're real, if they really exist, then what you'll find is someone that you can actually cut your deal with. And so, you know, I'll check with my supervisor is the collector's technique. Now, the supervisor in the collections world is the idiot in the cubicle next to them. They swap off being each other's supervisor. Okay, that's how that's really done, okay? This is not a game. This is serious business, and it's how it's done every day. So I talk to your supervisor. No, yeah, I don't really want to talk to your supervisor. I want to talk to your supervisor's boss because I want to discuss how many laws you people have been breaking. Have some fun with this. The last technique is the takeaway technique. When you're down to the end of the negotiation, you use the phrase, if I. That's a contingency, isn't it? It's a subject to. If I am willing to pay you $8,000 for this car, you have to throw in your lawnmower and your prize hunting dog. If you'll attach something back to the deal that's not attached to the deal, in a contingency close like that, use that if I and then take something as a technique. If I go along with your delivery date, which is longer than I wanted on the delivery of this printed material, if I go along with that, then I expect this, this, and this. And then they say, well, I can't give you this, this, and this. I say, well, if you're going to give me that delivery date, you're going to have to give me something else. As if you had something else anyway. I used to have a friend of mine that bought real estate for a living. He was a professional real estate investor like I was. And he always looked for the item through the house that they really prized the most. He was kind of a hardcore guy. I mean, if there was a shiny bass boat or a perfect John Deere lawnmower sitting there, or a $30,000 house with an $8,000 refrigerator in it, you know, he was looking for that thing that was obvious pride of ownership. And he'd say, now, if I give you $52,000 for this house and close it by Friday, you have to throw in the refrigerator. Why is this gun? Oh, you get all this reaction, right? Don't you? You know what I'm talking about? And when he got all that reaction, he said, well, if I let you have the refrigerator, what are you going to give me? Well, I have to knock some more off the price. As if he ever had the refrigerator. Okay? Watch for this stuff. It's happening to you all the time. This is how this is done. All right? This is not a game. So you need to use some of this stuff when you're using it in the right spirit. But what I want to warn you against is letting it happen to you. I want you to learn to happen to it. The second key to opening the door to huge bargains is one I'm not very good at, that's tough for me. It's called patience. You don't get married to a purchase. We talked about that. You have to maintain the walkaway power, and the only way you do that is if you maintain patience. You have to maintain patience. Now, when you do that, what happens is that walkaway power is accentuated. It is given even more power. You have to wait sometimes to get the best buy. You know, that going out of business liquidation sale? We had a business in our area not long ago in the last few weeks that was going out of business. And everything must go. They had signs everywhere, all over the whole neighborhood. We went over there, it was 10% off. It's like, oh crud, you had sales better than that when you weren't going out of business. We'll just wait until you're really out of business or almost out of business, right? And then, as the weeks progressed, those prices started dropping. But the trick is to not get the fever and run in there and go, oh, yes, it's a sale. They're out of business. It must be a bargain. I mean, there are some of these places that have been going out of business for 5 and 6 years. You know what I'm talking about? So, you know, you need to have patience. When I used to do real estate deals many years ago before I went broke, many of you know that's what I used to do for a living. I bought foreclosure and bankruptcy type real estate. And many, many, many times I would go up to a deal and I couldn't do the deal, and because the numbers didn't work, and it was just a numbers thing, it was a math thing with us. We had to get the right buyer, we couldn't do it, couldn't make money, we would back up. Well, sometimes it would foreclose and the bank would get it and something else would happen, and 6, 8 months later all these transactions had gone on. I've bought houses that other investors bought when I wouldn't buy them. They went broke and I ended up buying them at their foreclosure sale at what I wanted, because I backed off and waited till the thing cycled through again. Sometimes 2 or 3 years later even, and you get the buy you want. I had a lady working for me in those days who was a very, very bright lady. And she and her husband really, 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 really wanted a house. And they wanted this certain house. I mean, they had it all designed. They wanted a house in the country, and it had to have these certain features to it. And I kept saying, listen, we buy foreclosures around here. We'll get you a bargain. It's part of the benefits of being being part of our team. But they had house fever. I mean, they were a young couple, got to buy a house, got to buy a house, got to buy a house. You know the drill, right? They got that fever thing going. Sweat on the upper lip. Every time I'd see them, I'd say, calm down. Cold shower. Got to buy a house, Dave. Got to buy it. No, calm down. And I put them off. It was a year. I kept every week I'm having this discussion. Don't buy a house. Don't buy a house. We'll buy you a house. We'll get you a deal. Several times they went out looking and they almost bought something over the weekend. Don't do that. Just wait. We'll find it. It'll show up if you wait. Please. And over in patience coming from me, telling people to have patience. But they waited. I don't know why. I think it was a minor miracle. We found the house. The appraisal on the house, we bought it from a credit union after a foreclosure sale. The appraisal on the house was $134,500. We bought it for $54,000. Now that's pretty good 1 year's income, isn't it? It's like a $70,000, $80,000 savings. That's pretty rowdy. But you know what the National Auto Dealers Association statistics say? That 48 hours after you test drive a car, the typical person buys one. It only takes 2 days. That's why those salesmen are so intense, right? They know that in the car business, they call them be-backs. When you drive a car and you leave the lot and you say, I'll be back, they know you're lying. You don't mean to, but they know if you ever leave that lot that you are going to buy a car. You are in the zone. You have the car fever thing going, and you're going to buy one. And if you get off of their lot, you're going to buy it somewhere else. And once you are gone, they go, that's a be-back. And they know they'll never see you. Statistically, that's true. Very seldom do you go all the way back around, back to that first place where you test drove that car. That's why when you're walking towards the car after the test drive, and you look down, there's something around your ankle, it's the salesman. Okay? Because they know, on average, you're not going to be back. And one of the fruits of the Spirit is patience. Learn to wait on a deal. The third key to getting great deals is knowing where to get great deals. To me, I'm from Tennessee. I'm a Tennessee boy, got a little hillbilly in me. And so I remember growing up as a kid, some of you may have done this, we would go back in the country and we would be camping or near the lake or something, and there'd be one of those really nice, clear Tennessee streams. You all know what I'm talking about? And you know where I'm going probably. What we would do is we'd pull our pants up and we'd wade out there and we would go hunting for what we call crawdads. I think they're called crayfish in some parts of the country, right? We call them crawdaddies. And they're little bitty freshwater, little shrimp-looking things, right? Little pinchers on them. And if you're a good little Tennessee creek hunter, you know, you can just kind of walk around and you know some of those rocks, the way they sit right down in the mud, there's not one under there. It's too tight, you know? But some of them, there's a little bit of flow, there's a little bit of edge to it. I'll bet you there's one under there. And you learn to flip the edge of that thing up and let the current carry the silt away. And there he sits. And when you're first beginning, you grab him behind the pinchers. But if you're a real man, you just grab him and let him pinch you. You know what I'm talking about. And if you've ever hunted crawdads, how many of you ever going to admit ever doing that? Good, a few of you, all right. And so, you know, the truth is you kind of get that look. You can kind of see under which rocks there's going to be one, and others you don't even bother with, do you? Because you know they're not there. It'd be an unusual one if it was under the way that one's laying in the creek. You know what I'm talking about? Say yes. Yes. Okay. Deals are the same way, aren't they? Bargains are the same way, aren't they? Somehow they lay just right. You get a nose for it after a while. I've got a friend of mine that buys foreclosure and bankruptcy real estate to this day, and one of the things he does, he calls it driving for dogs. He drives around on Saturdays looking for houses that the grass hasn't been cut, the shutter is askew, the gutter is hanging down, one of the windows is broken, there appears to be nobody home, right? And he writes down those addresses, and then he goes and looks up the owners and finds out what the problem is because he smells a bargain. It looks just right. It sits just right. One of the things you can do to get a great buy is you can learn to do a little bit of trading, a little bit of bartering. Barter some goods or just your services if you want to. It's amazing to me what you can trade if you want to. I trade my kids' babysitting out all the time for good stuff. Child labor, it's a wonderful thing. No, seriously, I mean, you know, have you ever thought about what you have that you can trade for? When we were going broke, I had all these little guns, these little 22 rifles and stuff. I had bought at little garage sales and different things, auctions I had been at. I didn't want them, and I had a little bit of landscaping I wanted to do. This guy that did the bushes and the mulch, I got it done for a couple of little 22 rifles. We traded out. We bartered. See, most people have quit thinking about that. In a lot of areas of the world, that's a cultural norm. You think trade before you start trading this stuff for goods or services. Some of you have a skill, different things that you can do, and you can trade, do a little bit of bartering. Some of you need to team up with some of the other people who have kids your same age and just trade babysitting back and forth. Of course, the only problem with that is their kids are always meaner than yours. You know how that deal works, right? But you need to think through this. Think about what you can trade out. One of the things, again, that we did, and some of you that are struggling financially, you may want to try this. We discovered these little things, these blank gift certificates down at the office supply store. And what we did one Christmas was we gave away offers to help. My daughters may have given away a free babysitting to the single mom down the street who was struggling. Just redeem at any time. Wrote babysitting on here, two different evenings. And that was their ministry, their gift to that single mom down the street who was struggling a little bit. They didn't have money to buy her a gift, but they gave of themselves. My son and I wrote up one time for a lady who was a widow down the street that we would clean out her gutters and fix up her and mow her grass twice that summer and gave it to her. And that was our gift. We didn't have the money because we were B-R-O-K-E broke, but we wanted to give something. You know, it's amazing. I give these to my kids. My kids treasure these things as gifts, a date with dad. You know what a teenage daughter would give for that with some of you who are too busy? You know? And sometimes I'm too busy. And they'll redeem that sucker, man. I mean, Dad, yo, hey, right here. You and we're going to eat nice, Dad, you know? Right? We're too old for Happy Meals now, Dad, right? You know, we want pasta, you know? You know, hey, write it up with your son, a weekend fishing trip, you know? This stuff doesn't have to cost. What if you did this with your parents, that you offered to spend T-I-M-E with them? Because this year, Mom and Dad, we're not giving out gifts because we're getting out of debt. This year, Mom and Dad, we're doing something different with our money because we're on a plan and we're going to do something as a gift to you. You know, send them all your cut-up credit cards with one of these. They'll be so proud of you. They don't want a gift. They don't need another tie. think about this stuff as Christmas and birthdays come up. You know, just saying something that you would give of yourself, it's a powerful gift, isn't it? And we found that to be some very rewarding stuff. Now, when you're hunting for those bargains, you have to learn which rocks to turn over. I want to give you 10 or 12 good ideas. Most of you have done some of these. The first one is estate sales. How many of you have ever bought something at an estate sale? Whether it's an auction or it's a slow sale, kind of looks like a garage sale, doesn't it? But you can get some really interesting stuff there, can't you? You can get some fun stuff, sometimes some antique things if you know what you're doing. Certainly some unique items. Estate sales are a really fun place, and you can get bargains, and you can certainly negotiate. Because believe me, the kids and the heirs already took all the good stuff. Right? So this is stuff they're going to give to the Salvation Army if it doesn't sell shortly, okay, or Goodwill. So you might as well, it's like a garage sale at the end of the day, right? I think one of the best places to buy things is always remember to try to buy from individuals. Now, we're buying items here that are slightly used, slightly experienced. But see, in business, if I am going to sell televisions, I have to purchase the television and resell it at a higher price than I purchased it. My purchase price in accounting is called cost of goods sold. Okay? That's what I paid for it. If I don't sell it for more than my cost of goods sold, then I lose money, right? So if I buy a television for $100, I have to sell it for more than $100. So you come in there offering me $90 with cash and you're doing all these Dave techniques, I'm still not going to sell it to you for less than $100. I'm not in the business of losing money per transaction. It's like the two old boys in the watermelon business losing 10 cents a watermelon, say we got to make it up on volume, we're going to need a bigger truck. You know, I'm not in that business, right? And so if I'm in a business setting, I have to get at least what I paid for the item, the cost of goods sold back, plus some money. Now, when I'm an individual and have a television for sale, I don't have a cost of goods sold figure in mind. I have an item that's in the way, don't I? I mean, I had a couple of really nice 10-speed bicycles that Sharon and I had bought because we decided we were going to ride bikes. Never happened, okay? But they were parked between the boat and the car in the garage. You know what I'm talking about. So every time some kid popped that bike just wrong, it would fall over and hit the boat or hit the car. And it was constantly putting a scratch on one of the two, and I was over these bikes. It did not matter what we paid for these bikes. They needed to leave. So at the garage sale, I think we paid like $100-something for them. I put $25 for the pair on them, you know. Out of here, and this woman offered me $10, and I sold them, you know. It had nothing to do with what I paid for those bicycles, did it? They were an item that was in the way. I was a motivated seller. They were no longer, I was not doing this for profit. I was doing this to get rid of the thing, right? So when you're dealing with individuals and they're selling something, it's because they don't want it anymore, right? Keep that in mind. So always think like that. For some reason, when we go to buy something, we value their stuff more than they do. Think about that one. It'll come to you. You know, you need to go in there and go, you don't need to be mean or cut their stuff down. And, you know, what I tell people, I'm always really nice. I say, you know, you maybe can get more than that for it. I made an offer on a car the other day. I was looking at this really cute little car. I thought it'd be fun to ride around with the top down, get my bald head sunburned, you know. And the lady, I've known her for years. And I said, ma'am, you know, here's what the car is worth and here's the wholesale on it. And I'll give you this cash right now. And I held out the cash. And she said, well, I said, you know what, honestly, I think you can probably get more than that for it if you'll wait a little while. But if you want the cash right now, you have a deal. Now, that's a pretty, you know, courteous way. And she thought about it. And she said, you know, I think I can get more than that for it. I said, great. She kept the car. And that's okay. I'm perfectly fine with that. It didn't hurt my feelings and it didn't hurt hers. I wasn't trying to beat her up. But if she wanted some cash right then, she sold a car. It's okay, you know. And you can tell them that. You can say, you know, you might get more than that for that couch. But if you want this cash right now, I'm here. It's on the truck and I'm gone. And you'll see them go. You know, they get that German Shepherd thing going, you know. Buy from individuals. Another great place is public auctions. How many of you have bought stuff at auctions? Auctions are fun, but auctions are dangerous too, aren't they? You can get excited, you can be doing that Jerry Lewis thing, you know? Like you're directing traffic or something, right? And it just gets out, and all of a sudden you've bid something up and didn't even realize you were in the auction, you know? You know, that's all a joke, but it's not really a joke because your adrenaline gets flowing. Why do you think they use that cadence? Why do you think the volume's too loud in those speakers? It's to raise the adrenaline and get your heart rate to change. And man, that it's all there for excitement because with excitement you get stupid, you know? And so you better know the item that you're bidding on. You better know what you're doing. You better know what you're getting into, But get on some of the auctioneer's mailing list, okay? This is one that a friend of mine owns, one of the local auctioneers, and I'm on his mailing list. I get his auctions all the time, his estate sales, his real estate sales, his bankruptcy, his repossession sales, whatever he's doing. And I go, and you know, some of that stuff, and you see people at these auctions, they're absolutely out of their minds, don't you? You know, you see them pay $800 for a couch you saw retail the other day, brand new for $400. I mean, they've lost their ever-loving minds. Now, I don't, you know, what do people do? I had a lot of fun. I went to this liquidation auction one time. This business, this huge business was being liquidated, and there was like 25 copiers in a line. And they were bidding on these copiers. And those auctioneers were going out there, they were popping those copiers out of there. And I needed a copier. I was a one-man show. I was doing it in my living room in those days. That was many years ago. And I needed a copier. And I'm thinking, man, if I could get a deal, if I don't get a deal. And I had been shopping. I had already seen what used copiers were worth. I used to go to the office supply stores, you know the one I'm talking about, and see what I wouldn't pay at the auction. Take their catalog in my mind and go out there and go, okay, that's what I'm not going to pay. That's the ceiling because I can get a brand new one for that, right? You go in there with product knowledge, and then you don't get burned. Well, they're going down through there. These copiers are going high, man, and I'm just waiting. I'm thinking, well, maybe everybody that's here to get one by the time we get to the end will have gotten theirs, and I'll get mine at the end, you know? And they're just, man, they're going. I'm thinking, well, there's no chance. We get down towards the end. The auctioneer was just running down through there with a plug, plugging them in and letting them come on. I don't know what happened. The plug didn't go in good or something, and it wouldn't come on, and he kicked it a little bit and just made a joke. Sometimes they get to going too fast and don't think too. And he said, oh, it'll make a great boat anchor. And I went, $50. Now, this is a $4,000 copier. Feeder on top, enlarge, reduce, the whole deal, you know? Little drawers, all these little things, little cabinet with it, the whole puppy. I knew exactly what it was. I knew the copier. I had been looking at one similar. He kicked it, said, might be a good boat anchor. I said, $50. And we're standing in a little circle around this thing. You know, everybody's moving in these crowds, right? And this guy across from me, he goes, $75. And so I hit him at $25 increments until I bid $200, and before he thought, he bid $225. And I don't know what I was thinking. I looked up at him across the thing. I said, have you got a boat? You know, the guy quit bidding. I bought that copier for $250, brought it home, plugged it in. It worked perfect. It ran our business for many years after that. Amazing. Sometimes you just got to take a deep breath and be yourself, you know? Scary stuff. Another one, how many of you ladies and some of you men do couponing? You know what I'm talking about? Now, couponing will get you in trouble too, won't it? It'll make you buy things you wouldn't have bought otherwise. And you don't want to get led around by the nose with their little marketing campaign. But you also can take advantage of them if you have a plan, if you have a little bit of a filing system and keep up with it. I can tell you my wife, Sharon Ramsey, is the coupon queen. For many years, we had a running bet. It wasn't a bet. It was a running reward system because I wanted to, because she was so good at it. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things. She enjoys messing with them that way. It's non-confrontational, but she can beat them up. You know what I mean? And so she likes doing it that way. She had this little filing system. She cut them out every, you know, she'd get extra newspapers. She'd collect all this stuff. Amazing. One year, the last year that we tracked it, well, I used to give her half of whatever she saved in cash. In a gift. I would just blow. That was blow money. We had it budgeted in, had it figured in. And so what I would do is, the last year we couponed, $700 that year she saved on food. We tracked it. Now, many of you don't track it. You ought to track it for the fun of it. Okay? Now, couponing is a really good idea. Now, we all know that that works, but we all know that it can be misused and that you can mess up. Garage sales. Of course you've bought things at yard sales and garage sales. Of course you've bought things at flea markets, haven't you, at a good buy? You can do that. When you get ready to buy a car, how about going down and going to one of the repo auctions or the repo lots? Where they're selling the repossessions. Now, be careful again. You got to know your cars. You got to know what you're doing. But a car I bought down there a while back, one of the nicer cars we ever had in our life, was a really sweet vehicle. The book on it at the time, the retail book, the day I bought it, was $17,000. I bought it for $11,000, $6,000 under. It wouldn't start, though. And at a repo auction, it's as is. Could have been a bad engine. But I got a $6,000 spread. I can probably cover the engine. Right? 17 over 11. On value, so I'm taking a chance. Turned out to be, a $6,000 battery. Okay? And I drove that car for a long time before it ever actually came down in value to what I paid for it. But you've got to be careful. You've got to know a little bit about what you're doing, and you don't get to pick the color. Okay? This was not a color I would have necessarily driven, but it wasn't too bad. It was a brown car. Nothing wrong with brown. I just wouldn't have picked that one out. Refunding, kind of like couponing. Rebating, many of you have done that. Again, buying homes, kind of like repos, doing it at foreclosure. Now, let me tell you, foreclosures are dangerous buying at the steps if you don't know what you're doing. That's a scary thing. The best way for an amateur, a beginner, to buy a foreclosure is from the bank after the sale or from the owner before the sale. The owner of a home owns the home until the hammer falls at the foreclosure sale, and you could buy it from him or her and save them from getting foreclosed on, maybe keep them out of a bankruptcy even, and you might get a great deal. That sounds like a win-win orange type deal to me. How about pawn shops? Really lousy idea if you want to get money in terms of pawning something. Really bad plan, right? But an awesome place to buy stuff. Oh, the pawn shops, everything's stolen. Oh, you watch way too much TV, okay? They watch these things like a hawk. They are highly regulated in most states. And as a matter of fact, several of them that I buy from, I have a good friend that owns a really large pawn shop. Every item in that pawn shop is checked with the local police department computer system as they check it in. They have less than 0.5% theft attempts in there. In other words, they're not a fence, okay? And you can get some great buys there. I bought my bicycles there. Now we've got bikes that we ride. We got them back, okay? Not the same ones, but we got some mountain bikes over there. Paid $50 for two bikes. Same bikes at Toys R Them would have been $150 apiece. Okay? And as much as we ride them, I don't care if they didn't have a tag hanging off of them as we wheeled them out. If I'd have wanted a tag, I could have bought one for the money I saved. Okay? Think. It's okay to buy slightly experienced items. Classified ads, of course, that's where you can go if you want to get a hold of something like a really good individual who's selling something, the thing we started this process with. Now, our kids for years lived in used, experienced clothing from consignment sales. My children thought Oshkosh Bagosh came from a garage. Some lady's consignment sale. And I'll tell you, to this day, Sharon Ramsey has our clothes going into the consignment sales. We don't buy as much there. Some of our kids think that that's fun. They go buy the stuff there. But I won't tell you my clothes today come out of a consignment sale. But I've worn consignment sale suits many times. And excellent products. I mean, go to a consignment sale in a good end of town, what you're getting there is a $1,500 suit for $50 if it happens to fit. And, you know, if you keep wearing those lapels, they'll come back in style eventually. Ooh. But seriously, if you watch what you're doing, Sharon has some clothes to this day hanging in her closet that she enjoys that are excellent little purchases that came from consignment sales. But we make several hundred dollars a year still just putting our clothes out for sale in consignment sales. Now, how many of you have done one or more of these things? Everybody in here, if you're breathing in and out, you've played that game, right? You've done one of these, unless you're just freshly hatched and wet behind the ears. My point is not, have you ever done it? My point is, always do it. Make it a way of life. We are a tightwad. Let me tell you something. Normal in North America, with 70% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, is broke. Your goal has to be, if you want financial peace, to become weird. Let me give you one last one that's not on there, just for the fun of it. Find a convention that is shutting down. As they're closing down the cookware convention, they will give you the cookware to keep from shipping it home. If you happen to be there after hours as they're shutting down the convention. Now, some of these conventions, you don't want their stuff, okay? But, you know, check around at some of the convention centers, some of the big hotels that have the big halls, and they have these different exhibit things going on. They don't want to ship it to Portland, Oregon, okay? There are times we've had 5 or 10 or 20 financial peace books laying around. We didn't have a truck flying back. We were just flying back. And I would have given someone those books to keep from having to feel guilty about throwing them away because I wasn't carrying them on the airplane, right? If you'd walked up at that point, you'd have gotten some free financial peace or more than enough books because I wasn't carrying the stupid things around. You know what I mean? So you go into a convention shutdown, you'll get some bargains. That's a lot of fun as well. What's the point here? The point is have some patience. The point is know where to look for the deals. Remember the keys that open the door to huge bargains. And most of all, always remember those little negotiating techniques. Try some of that. Try the if I takeaway technique. Try the that's not good enough technique. Try it just for fun once. What if I'm wrong? Do they shoot you for this? Go in there and just try it one time. Just you'll have some, you'll be going away going, you know, I've been scared of that for 52 years. I'm glad I finally tried it. Just try something different. Because what you're doing right now brought you to where you are. If you want to be at a different place, you have to try something different. If I'm wrong, you can always go back to your old way and be broke again. It's okay. Buy some bargains and enjoy the process.
I've used some of the techniques, and to buy a brand new tire for $5, pretty neat.
That's not good enough.
It's okay to negotiate.
I tell people bashful salespeople have skinny kids. Bashful citizens have thin wallets. That's just all it is. If you'll do what Dave's teaching you, you can save some money.
We got two riding tractors that way. One from Lowe's and one from Walmart. $400 for an $800 machine and $800 for a $1,400 machine. So, but there's still nothing wrong with it. It's brand new. It's just somebody returned it.
I think
One thing that I've learned from this process is that patience has really paid off for us.
When I finally started to learn how to walk away, it's like, I did it. You know, it was something I conquered. It's something, a little hurdle that I got over.
Now, what I do is I go home and I sleep on it at night. And I say, if it's important enough to me to get it, but then I can get it tomorrow.
And I definitely participated in consignment sales for the kids. I've made a lot of money selling clothes that, you know, they outgrew. And I bought most of their clothes when they were small, only because they were in great condition at a low price, and there was definitely nothing wrong with them.
Credit cards reek.